This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Say yes to Pure Leaf Tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf Tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play Stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Steve Kerr joins us in an hour. Let's go to Steven. By the way, real quick, because he said it. As many of you as want to think this, you're allowed to. It's not against the rules. But no, Steve Kerr will not be fired for any reason, under any scenario, at all, over the next 2 years. Period. Kukush.
I mean, we'll see how they do against Portland.
Okay.
I mean, I'm only doing that for effect.
I don't know why.
If it hadn't been for Michael Malone and Taylor Jenkins.
I mean, I guess. I don't know why why so many of you bring that to the party.
Right.
It's just not in the room. It's not invited.
I don't care.
Yeah, right. It's completely a non-factor. Like, it would be, like, what would be more unlikely in Bay Area sports right now? Buster Posey being fired as
President of baseball
ops, or I mean Brock Purdy. It's much more likely. I'm trying to think of a Niner comp, like George Kittle gets cut, or Trent Williams gets traded to Carolina, or other like completely outlandish ideas. Steve Kerr is not getting fired.
Yeah, like, I mean, if we're talking about the calendar year 2025, I think all three of those have the exact same likelihood: Buster Posey, Kyle Shanahan, and Steve Kerr. Not fired, not fired, not fired.
Yeah.
For any reason at all.
Exactly.
Like, I mean, unless, you know, somebody ends up in jail, I'm a bit against it. Steven in Mountain View. Hi, Steven. Thanks for calling. What's up?
Hey, how's it going, guys? I'm not saying Steve Kerr by any means should be fired. What I'm saying is, I don't know why we keep talking about the players and those final couple of plays as if it's their fault. We had that game won in the third quarter. But then Steve Kerr went and decided in the fourth quarter, hey, let's go ahead and take Trace Jackson Davis out of the game when he was clearly the momentum changer in the third quarter and start with this lineup that he hasn't had all year. He hasn't had this lineup with Jimmy Butler like a single time. He ran Buddy Hield into the ground. I love Buddy Hield. I love all these guys. I think this is a great team. We can definitely win a championship. But the decision-making by that coaching staff, I just don't get it. I don't understand.
Hey, Steven, can I ask you a question? I believe I heard you just say that Trace Jackson Davis was clearly the momentum changer in that game last night. Did I hear you correctly? Did you say that?
In that third quarter, absolutely.
He played 3 minutes in the game.
He didn't play in the third quarter. I think you're misremembering.
He played 3 minutes total in the entire game and did not score. Are you sure you have? I just want to make sure we've got you right.
I guess I misspoke. I'm sorry. But it's been a whole, like, it's not just this game that happened last night. This isn't the first time that we've seen this happen. But anytime we get in these clutch games, he messes with the lineup. I don't know why he does it. Like, something's working, and then he switches it up. Like, I just don't get it. That's what I'm getting at.
Okay. Yeah, Steven, thanks. I saw them get into a clutch game with the final five, and they went with their starting lineup, which is usually their finishing lineup. and guys didn't hit shots, and guys threw the ball away, and they're actually pretty good in clutch games. They have a winning record in clutch games this year, but I get it. I've been here long enough to know that when the Warriors lose, it's Steve Kerr's rotations and his fault.
It can be. Last night was not one of those for me. And,
yeah, not for me either.
But the third quarter, they outscored San Antonio 37-21, and so that was the game where the second quarter, you kind of gave it up. The third quarter, you took it back after you dominated the first quarter, and it was a classic third quarter where Steph had 14 and everybody contributed, and you found a way to build that lead up. And just those first few minutes of the fourth quarter, that's where, for me, it kind of slipped away. And then you brought in everybody, like you said, your finishing lineup, and your finishing lineup could not make the plays necessary on either end to close that thing out.
Couldn't hit a shot. It couldn't hit a shot.
Yeah, you didn't score a basket over the last 30 minutes.
Nobody hit a shot. So, like, that's where I'm looking last night. I'm looking, and so whatever the reason may be, I don't know. We've played with this a little bit today. I'm not blaming Brandon Pajemski, Moses Moody, and the rest. Jonathan Kuminga, Buddy Hield. I'm not blaming them. I just think that big time sports often ends up in that spot. Look at Wilmer Flores this year for the Giants as an example. Wilmer Flores seems to have a habit of the big hit. The big hit. Wilmer Flores is not your third hitter. He's not your fourth hitter. He's not your fifth hitter. He's not your most important player. He usually is not even on the field. He's a designated hitter, but he's not Chapman. He's not Ramos. He's not Adames. He's not Jung-Hoo Lee. You're going to win games when your other people do good stuff, and you're vulnerable when they don't. And I think that to me is what I see constantly with the Golden State Warriors and, oh, by the way, most NBA teams. I know what the ones are usually going to do. Yes, they can mess up in a final 2 minutes, 3 minutes, whatever. I know what the twos are usually going to do. But when three, four, and five give you something, you become next level. When they don't, you're at minimum vulnerable. And that's what happened last night. They became vulnerable, and in a three-minute game, because it was tied with 3 minutes to go, San Antonio hit one more shot than they did. And that's what happens. So, yeah, the Warriors are like almost impossible to beat when they get stuff from number three, four, and five.
And that didn't happen in the first 3 minutes of the fourth. And I'm looking at the game log where you open up and you go 1-for-8 from the floor in the first 3 minutes. And then the lead goes all the way down to 4 because you couldn't score. And then Steph comes in. And even when Steph came in, if you want to count the baskets that were made by the Warriors in the final 9 minutes of the game, there's that Butler 3 we referenced. And there is a Curry layup, a Curry layup, and a Curry layup. Those are your four baskets. Now, a bunch of free throws. Kevon, Jimmy Buckets was all day at the stripe. Draymond, two clutchies late. But you had three Steph non-threes. You had a Jimmy corner three, which is found money. End of list of field goals in the last 9 minutes. And, you know, in the first 3 minutes, you had a Pods miss, couple of Kevon misses, a Moses miss, and all the rest of it. So you went from double digits, let's get this to 20 and give them the night-night, to all of a sudden it's a four-point game and now we have to grind.
Got
to
make a shot.
Shame. Yeah,
got to make a shot. They didn't make a shot. Most nights they've been making shots. Didn't make any shots last night in the fourth quarter. We're sponsored by San Francisco International Airport. A lot of you want to keep weighing in. Let's keep doing it, okay? Wherever you want to point to the Warriors' current situation, whether it's last night or as a whole, they find themselves in the box, in the play-in tournament, as of now. However, Minnesota and Memphis are going to tip off here in about 2.5 hours, okay? But we'll keep taking your calls, 888-957-9570. Steve Kerr, 5. It's Willard and Dibbs.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Green from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
You pull your putter out too early.
Now, back to
Will and Divvy
on 95.7 The Game.
All right, Steve Kerr is going to join us in just over 40 minutes. Might be fun to do this. Let's take some calls, especially since, and I get it, this is my sense, and I want to overdo what is known in the sports world sometimes as the lunatic fringe.
Okay.
Shout out to our guy. Why am I blanking on his name? Former third base coach with Bruce Bochy. Come on.
Tim Flannery.
Thank you, Tim Flannery.
His band. You're welcome.
The Lunatic Fringe.
Yep.
I do not think that most Warrior fans want to fire Steve Kerr. I think that most Warrior fans would roll their eyes at the idea. But whenever they lose, there's always a lot of Steve Kerr this and a lot of Steve Kerr that. And I get that because he's the head coach and that's how we fan and that's how we watch sports. So like, what if we did take some phone calls right now on just like, what is it? What is it you would want to say to Steve Kerr today? What is it? I'm not promising that we're going to do it when he comes on at 5 o'clock at all, but like, what is it you'd want to ask him? What is it you'd want to say to him? What is it that you're mad about with regard to him? Or you can call 888-957-9570 and say every single person near you who says anything bad about Steve Kerr, you think they're crazy.
There was a caller on Steiny and Goo yesterday who said, if anybody asks for Steve Kerr to be fired, I want you to meet me in downtown Hayward and we're going to fight. And I wish I remembered his name because it was really, really funny. He's like, you can meet me right there on A Street and Mission Boulevard, right in the heart of Hayward, and introduce yourself, and we're going to fight. Because he was that adamant about this notion of firing Steve Kerr being kind of ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. It's beyond ridiculous.
It's beyond ridiculous. And so you could look at, like, the Memphis situation. Why did Taylor Jenkins get fired?
Nope.
And you look at the Denver situation, why did Michael Malone get fired? Even look at Sacramento, why did Mike Brown get fired? And all three of those situations are unique. We don't all know the full story. We had Ramona Shelburne on yesterday, who is as dialed in of an NBA reporter as any human being on planet Earth, and she said it was a bit of a disconnect between GM and coach, coach and roster, roster and ownership, and all of it felt like it was a little bit disconnected. So if you look at this Warrior organization, owner to GM, GM to coach, coach to star players, is there any part of that chain that is anything other than fluid, golden, and impervious to any possible damage? I mean, it's not perfection, but there's no schism in any one of those parts, right? The GM made the roster better. The owner spends out of his pocket. The coach has won 4 titles, and the star players love the coach and admire the GM, and they love the owner. So what are we talking about?
I don't know.
Me either.
I mean, and I'm,
but it's that, rotations.
Right, but and that's not to say that, like, that can be the takeaway every night. Like, what you just laid out is a very, very large, broad view of Warrior basketball over the last 12 years. And I don't know anybody who doesn't think that. There's nobody, right? Right? None of you are looking at the last 12 years and being like, well, that was disappointing. I don't.
If you are the anyone could have coached this team guy or gal, 888-957-9570.
Or don't, actually. Throw your phone in the bay if you're that person.
I said 888-957-9570, and I meant it. Okay. I want to hear from you.
Well, if you're that person, 888-957-9571.
Is that an alternate number?
Yeah,
in case
call,
the line's
call
busy?
Somebody else.
Call my message phone.
Yeah, call my message phone.
1-888-FIRE-KERR.
888, you don't know what the hell you're talking about.
1-800-CAN-KERR.
But
he's out.
I don't, it's not unfair to get in on people after a night. I don't think that's unfair. I just think these things they get out of pocket. So like if somebody wants to go, hey, at the 8-minute mark last night, Steve did this, and I didn't get that, and I didn't like it. Okay, that comes, like, that's a conversation. But I, even short of, like, the whole, oh, let's fire Steve Kerr, I hear this a lot. Man, it's always Kerr. Every time they lose, he does the wackadoodle. And at the core of it, it feels like the fan who says that is literally trying to make the point that people with the Warriors, namely Steve, don't know what they're doing. And I'll go ahead. I've done this before. I'll admit it again. This is a hole in my game, I guess. I completely shut down when I hear that. Because it's like, what are you talking about? What are you talking about? They win constantly. The man can't seem to escape rings throughout his entire career. Everywhere he goes.
He's sixth all time among coaches.
So it's like...
in rings.
I just, like, is there a way to shape the conversation to where we can do a little bit more of, like, stay in the moment? And that's kind of what I was getting at earlier. Like, no, the Warriors, in a general sense, don't get more room to be tired than other teams. I'm happening to make an opinion based on what I see is going on right now. April 10th. Is it April 10th? Is it April 10th?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
April 10th, based on very recent history, based on where they've been, who they're playing, what's going on right now. That's what I see. That's what I see. But, you know, whatever. I mean, let's hear from some people.
Well, from the YouTube chat, just to prime the pump,
yeah.
IllWill81 chimed in with, I'm that guy, followed up with, Kerr is vastly overrated.
Okay.
So that's just to try to stoke the fire a little bit, get the blood flowing.
But is that actually a genuine opinion, or is that somebody on YouTube who thinks this is how I can get a reaction out of Willard and Dibbs?
Well, I don't normally pander to those types of comments, but the fact that the individual started it with, I'm that person, tells me that they're probably genuinely of the mind that Kerr is overrated, and there is the notion that anybody could have won with this team,
yeah.
Which I don't co-sign that take. Having coached for 25 years in high school, I've had talented teams and untalented teams, and I've been able to, like, sit back and win and also grind as hard as I could. And I went 0-26 one year as a high school basketball
coach.
Nice
job.
Yeah, and you know what? That was probably my best coaching job ever. We were talentless, and my backcourt was a pair of twins, one of whom who just wanted to fight.
She was
punching the opposition. We'd get down 37-4, and the hands would fly.
Wait a minute. What sport was this?
This was JV girls basketball, Sandersville High School.
God, I thought you were talking about volleyball. I'm like, how the hell are you punching people in volleyball?
Well, I've had some of those teams, too. But
well, anyway.
Anyway, just because the coach wins doesn't mean the coach is good or bad, but Steve Kerr has won with a number of different teams.
I have an opinion about your 0-26 year.
I was overrated.
No, any coach could have taken that team to go 0-26.
Well, I actually took over when they were 0-9.
Yeah, but it's a fact.
So I only went 0-17.
Okay.
So actually not every coach could have because the coach quit. He couldn't handle it.
Well,
they lost their first 9, and the varsity coach came to me and said, I need you to do me a favor.
I need you to lose the next 17
games. I need you to at least show up. Do you know how many bottles of booze I got from parents at the team party?
Ooh.
Dude, I'm talking handles.
It's not a bad idea.
Well,
okay.
When you go in 26, you buy the coach booze.
All right, Steve Kerr in a half hour. Until then, let's rip him. All right, David in Santa Clara. Hi, David. What's up?
I want to know the people that think that anybody could coach the Warriors. Like, who else would they want? Because you've seen Doc in the Clippers not win anything. He's only one of the Celtics, and he still can't win now. It's like, let's give Steve some credit. Got us 4 rings in, 11, 12-ish years? The playoff appearances and finals appearances too. Like, who else do they think is going to do it? So let's give the man some credit. Before him, before Mark Jackson, probably-ish, we weren't even able to smell the playoffs. And this is when back when Mike Dunleavy Jr. and Troy Murphy were playing. So I feel like everybody that's saying all this stuff is like bandwagon fans that haven't been watching and haven't like experienced what it feels like to actually lose and go 20-win seasons or whatnot. And it's the same thing with Kyle Shanahan too. It's like, once we do a little bad, we're blaming the coaches, but who do we want instead? Thanks for taking the call, guys.
All right, David, thanks. One thing I think that we're like sort of unfortunately addicted to, I watched this with the whole Brady and Bill Belichick thing. When you get multiple people doing a good job in one place, we seem sort of obsessed over figuring out who's actually the person who did it. Now, I know it ended up feeling definitive that it was much more Brady than Belichick, and I bet Steve Kerr would be the first one to tell you, yeah, this is much more Steph than it is Steve.
Right.
That doesn't mean Steve's not doing a good job. It doesn't mean that. And actually, I think Exhibit A in the moment, if you want it to be, is to look around at what's happening in the Western Conference. Like, it's not that easy to have all the egos in the room and all the success and stay on the same page. Denver won a championship 2 years ago. Their coach did not make it to the playoffs this year. He lost his job. So did the GM. Taylor Jenkins lost his job with the Memphis Grizzlies. There's a lot to navigate that has nothing to do with rotations. And that, for me, actually might be one of the most impressive things about this era of Warrior basketball, even though Bob Myers moved on, but they handed the baton to somebody inside the building. You've got an owner and now two GMs. You've got a head coach. You had a big three. You moved one of the big three out. You brought in a new member of the big three. Two of the current big three are known of two of the most volatile players emotionally in the entire league. And then the other one is a clear all-time great. And all of that action is happening in one room, and somehow respect stays there. I think that's underrated.
It's severely underrated.
I think that's hard.
The idea of rotations, if we can just visit that part of it for a moment, the rotations are not Steve Kerr sitting there like a high school coach deciding that he wants to play Billy and not Timmy because Billy's been hustling at practice and Timmy showed up 7 minutes late and therefore I'm going to try to punish him. All of these ideas about rotations, matchups, fatigue, it goes from Dr. Rick Celebrini in sports and fitness through the cadre of head coaches, of which there are probably 10, many of whom none of us really know. And then it gets to Steve. You have meetings and matchups and all the rest of it. So the idea that Steve Kerr is sitting there like Oz in The Wizard of Oz behind some curtain, magically just picking who he wants to play, that's not the way this goes. And the whole thing about being a head coach in the NBA is so much more about coaching egos, massaging egos, coaching the coaches, creating a culture, and all the rest of it. So you look at Steve Kerr, who is the third longest tenured coach in the association, and he is, as I mentioned, behind only five coaches who have more titles than him, and he's coached a lot fewer games than all of them, except for John Kundla, who coached in the 40s and 50s.
I was going to say, who?
Yeah, it's Phil Jackson, Auerbach, John Kundla, Popovich, and Pat Riley. Those are the only ones ahead of him. So, yeah, Steve Kerr has been doing pretty well for himself.
Yeah, no doubt. And all those guys had great all-time players as well, obviously, because that's how it works.
Kundla have?
I don't know. Who did he have? Who was good back then?
He was in the Minneapolis Lakers, so feels like there's some George Mikan in there.
George, I was going to say.
It's always safe when it's the 40s or 50s to go George Mikan.
Yeah.
Wow, Mikan carried him.
Guy got that drill, right? More George Mikan.
That's right.
Morgan in Morgan Hill. Hi, Morgan. What's up?
Hi, guys. I actually wasn't calling to talk about Steve Kerr, but one thing I'll say about Kerr is, oh, my God, we're just so lucky that we got Steve Kerr. I mean, considering all of the years and the ebbs and flows of Draymond Green, the Jordan Poole punch, and then Kuminga complaining about playing time, and through it all, let alone the championships, Kerr has had total control of the locker room. We're just so lucky to have Kerr. But that's not why I called. I want you to ask Steve Kerr something. When you interview him, you could decide to or not. And this kind of originated for me from the morning roast this morning on my way into work. So this is a kind of a continuation from then. I didn't have time to call in this morning, but I was getting really fired up because, you know, there's this thing in the morning roast going on the last few weeks where they defend Jonathan Kuminga to the very end. Like, you know, they can't understand why everybody's calling to complain about Jonathan Kuminga. Why aren't people calling to complain about Moody going 3-for-11, Pajemski not playing, you know, why this and that? And here's my argument. The reason, one of the many reasons why Jonathan Kuminga is such a lightning rod. My argument is Jonathan Kuminga is the only player on the team who takes shots that he should not be taking. Why does he keep shooting threes with a guy right in front of him? I mean, he should be taking wide open threes, but he continues to shoot threes when his defender is right in front of him. Why does that happen? And so my question that I hope you can ask you, Kerr, is how often are they talking to Jonathan Kuminga about his shot selection? And I understand basketball is a fluid sport. You need to let him play and all that good stuff. But to me, Jonathan Kuminga is the only guy taking shots that he should not be taking. Thoughts?
All right, Morgan, thanks very much. It's actually, I don't think it's an uninteresting topic at all. I think that in general, the idea of shot selection, when you say how often are they talking to Jonathan about shot selection, I think they're talking to all the players all the time
right. About
shot selection. From what I've gathered from Golden State Warriors, they really want to encourage all of their people to shoot the shot. It's all you got. Like, when it's open, shoot it, and we're going to take your misses. We don't care about that. Now, that does not mean shoot it all the time. Yes, I think Steve has also called out certain players at times for shot selection, especially if it's early in the shot clock and whatnot. I see the same thing with Jonathan, not so much in terms of shot selection. The only way I can describe it is still the same thing that I've said for the last number of days, which is that it feels to me like Jonathan is still unsure of himself, at least around Jimmy Butler, in what I feel is kind of a new team. Jonathan has only now had, how many games has it been since the injury? I feel like we're about 15, 17?
Yeah, less than
probably,
that, I think.
Probably yep. Somewhere in that neighborhood. Yep. And he just doesn't quite look sure of himself. And in the NBA, that ball is moving so quickly, and the defense is moving so quickly. A split second of hesitation means a good shot turns into a bad one. And so, yes, there are some of those, but he's not the only one at all.
Agreed.
I mean, yeah. Steph Curry is a habitual bad shot taker. The problem for that conversation is he makes some of them.
Exactly. There is no bad shot with Steph Curry. And I just looked at Jonathan's four threes last night, and there was one, and this was in that woeful stretch in the fourth quarter where they went 1-for-8 in the first 3 minutes, and Jonathan gets it above the break, as Tim Roy would say, which means above the break where the three-point line fans out, right extended from the foul line, and he gets it with about 15 on the shot clock, and he shoots a three. It's not hotly contested, but it's contested, and it's the kind of three where you would probably rather he wait for the ball to touch a couple other people. That's a three that you take with 4 seconds on the shot clock, and you think, all right, that's a good three. We're late clock. But he took it early in the clock and he missed it. And that's the only one of his four attempts that you could look at and think, bad shot. And it made me think about what you were describing with Jonathan Kuminga, where he's still trying to find his way, not only with Jimmy Butler, but since he's come back from injury. And I'm looking at the number, and it is 14 games since the ankle. And he missed another one because of the bruised tailbone or the pelvic contusion or whatever. So it's only been 14 games. And even at that, he's only playing between 18 and 25, 27 minutes. So he's not back in that you-go-cook flow, nor will he be. So when he's out there, I do think that he's kind of searching for himself, you know?
No doubt. 888-957-9570. Chuck in the city. Hi, Chuck. Thanks for calling.
Hey, thanks. I was struck by what Steve said last night after the loss. He said, they're already in the postseason, so if that's the case, I'm thinking let's guarantee the big three a week's rest. Let's rest them for the last two games. You know, there's no guarantee that playing them is going to give them a rest next week, so let's have that rest now. What do you guys think?
Well, I think, Chuck,
the bold strategy, Cotton.
Yeah, let's see if it works out for him. Chuck, thanks. I wouldn't do it at all, and here's why. I get where you're coming from, like, you see NBA teams now a lot prioritize rest over the standings. They'll do it. And so I get it. The problem is if you rest the rest of the way now, you're almost guaranteeing that you'll be the eight. You're almost guaranteeing it because, no, Minnesota's got two really easy games left.
After tonight.
Yeah, maybe you'd end up at the seven. And, yes, I'm assuming that if you rested all three of your guys, you're probably going to lose both of those games, and that's not a guarantee. We've watched teams do that before, and they come out and win a basketball game. So who knows? But if the idea is go ahead and lose these next two, and just guarantee rest and then take your chances in the play-in. The problem is the 8 seed. Now you end up in Minnesota likely, or Memphis on a Tuesday night. I don't like that scenario at all because you would probably be an underdog in the game. Doesn't mean you're not allowed to win it, but you're risking a somewhat probable loss there. And then you're putting yourself into a home game on a Friday night to get into the playoffs, and there's all kinds of bad stuff with that. First of all, it's a one-and-done scenario. It's a March Madness game. You just don't want to do that in the NBA. Secondly, even if you win it, you are then unrested and on your way to Oklahoma City.
For a Sunday game.
Terrible idea.
So there's the idea of rest. Yeah. And I do like the notion that the caller threw out there, but the best way to get rest is by avoiding the play-in. So you wrap up the season Sunday in a matinee. You're going to be there at Chase Center, 12:30 tip. You're done at 3. You win. You're the 6th seed. Now you've got Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and probably also Saturday off, pending the schedule. You may not start your playoff until Sunday. They do like to put that marquee team in the marquee spot, so maybe it's Saturday, maybe it's Sunday. But at the very least, you've got 5 days off, maybe 6. There's your rest. So you got to grind this thing out. I do wonder about what happens if Memphis loses tonight against Minnesota, because now you and Memphis are tied for 6, which means you're the six.
Right.
Memphis and Minnesota would be tied for the 7. So you go out and you beat Portland, and maybe Memphis and Minnesota both lose. Well, then maybe you look at that Clipper game and think, okay, we're guaranteed to be the 6. Maybe you do take an extra day of rest in that scenario.
I still think you want to stay the hell out of the play-in tournament.
Yep.
But I will grant you this. Like, if you're a Warrior fan, I think you really, this is what I think you root for. You want Minnesota to win tonight and beat Memphis. And then Memphis immediately hits the road for a back-to-back in Denver tomorrow night. You want Memphis to lose that too. So if Memphis loses twice and you beat Portland, you have clinched no worse than the 7. And that way, I assume Minnesota's going to win out. I do think they would. You go into the Clipper game knowing if we win, we're the 6. If we lose, we're hosting Memphis on Tuesday night at Chase for a chance to go play the Rockets. Not ideal, but not preventative. Not the end of the world. If you can come out, I know it's scary, but then if you can handle that game Tuesday night and beat Memphis, which I like the Warriors' chances to do.
At home.
At home, if full health. You still are going to grant yourself, at minimum, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday off. I don't know if you would start on Saturday or Sunday, but you'd get at minimum 3 days rest. And your round one opponent would be the Rockets, which, I don't know, if I poll the universe, I think people think that that's easier than the Lakers.
Yeah, it's different.
I don't know if it actually is, but
well,
that's what a lot of people think.
After last night, I'm in your camp of I don't even care who they play, just get me a playoff series, because what I saw last night kind of shocked me to my core, to where no matchup is more favorable than the other if you play like that.
Yeah, I agree. We're brought to you by Fremont Bank, here for you, here for good. Steve Kerr in 18 minutes, but plenty of time to talk to you until then. And again, what would you want to say about Kerr or to Kerr or ask Kerr or whatever with all of this discussion that sort of has opened up about him and the job that he did last night and throughout the year? 888-957-9570. We'll keep taking your calls. And then Steve joins us in 18 minutes on Willard and Dibbs.
We're already in the playoffs, you know, and so this is what the playoffs feel like. You know, a lot of pressure, a lot on the line, tough losses. And so the only thing you can do is you pick up your chin and off the floor, and you get back at it the next day. So we got a huge game in Portland, and we'll fly there tomorrow and get these guys ready and right back at it.
Dub Nation, it's Steve Kerr. You're listening to Willard and Dibbs on 95.7 The Game.
Well, you're about to be listening to Steve Kerr. Imagine safely on the ground in the Pacific Northwest and ready to chat with us here in about 10 minutes.
Yeah, and I'd say that there's a lot to ask him, but
there is.
There is, but there's not, because, like, you know, a lot of what happened last night to me was players not playing well in moments where you needed players to play well. And we can talk about you know, sets and execution and the inbound to Jimmy? Was there something that you could have done better? And there's a lot of things, I think, that happened last night that, for me, are not so Steve Kerr related as far as blame. And you know me, I'm down to blame a coach at any moment.
Sure.
Because it's fun. It's fun to blame a coach for things that don't go
it's
right.
It's fun.
I mean, this whole thing is fun,
Mark. Well, of course it's fun. What we do is fun.
It's super fun.
Is blaming a coach fun?
It can be.
Why?
When Kyle Shanahan doesn't know the overtime rules, that's fun.
I don't think that was fun at all.
Well, it's only fun because you look at it.
They lost the Super Bowl. It was not fun.
They want the ball. They want the ball. Yeah. They want the ball.
He was at that Luka game last night. For those who don't
Kermit?
Know. Dibs is referring to Patrick Mahomes.
I didn't do a good Mahomes. I just was trying to relay the excitement.
They want the ball.
That's much better.
Anyway.
A little bit of Yoda in your Kermit. The ball they want.
I do think there's a lot to ask, Steve. It's not just about last night.
Yeah.
Look, this coaching carousel in the Western Conference, I don't think there's anybody better to talk on it than Steve. And he is kind of the anti-Malone. Like, he is the example of how to not end up in that situation. If you look at the argument that happened in Denver, a coach, a general manager, and a front office not on the same page, and it was often about, do we play young players or do we play vets? Sound familiar? But somehow Steve and this ownership and front office has navigated this through championships and high-profile games, and Mike Malone and the Denver Nuggets could not, and then for different reasons, same thing in Memphis with Taylor Jenkins. I'd love to get Steve's perspective on that.
Oh, and he will offer it, and he will
damn
not
right he will.
Pull any punches as he did with Mike Brown. And, you know, honestly, it stinks. Michael Malone is a good coach. He's won at multiple places. He was great here as an assistant. You go to Denver, you win a title, and then with four games left to go, you get the Ziggy and you get got. I don't know how that makes sense.
I don't know how it helps you, but I also am not an expert on the Denver Nuggets,
yep.
And I will forever support the right of bosses to decide who the right person is to do the job. But yeah, this is outside the box. Like, if we're going to believe Nikola Jokic, I know a lot of people are like, well, Nikola must have signed off on it. And he said something to where he was like, look, they told me what they were doing, and all right, that's what they're doing. I don't know, you know, from what cloth he's cut. I don't know. You know, maybe he was just informed. And Jokic is that kind of guy where he's like, well, you know, he said, I was told this was happening. I was not asked. I was told. And so, therefore, okay, my job is to go play basketball.
Yep. And he had his 32nd triple-double of the year, and they beat Sacramento.
Right.
So, Jokic, and this is where you and I talked about it yesterday, like, I was kind of excited to maybe face Denver now because Denver is going through a certain amount of upheaval, and then you and I came to the realization that Nikola Jokic is probably still a good player, even though there's a new GM and a new head coach.
I think he's good. I don't know what everyone else thinks.
Well, I don't think that he got any worse between the firing and where he is now, and he had 20-12-11, and they beat Sacramento in a battle of new interim-ish head coaches.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, that's among the things that we'll talk to Steve about, but let's keep talking to you, Sean in Oakland. Hi, Sean. Thanks for the call. What are you doing?
Yo, hey, thanks for taking my call. You know, I just want to talk about late game execution. I just kind of cringe when I'm watching the Warriors the last few minutes. Obviously, they shouldn't have been in that situation yesterday, but let's talk about offense and defense. It just seems like we're so predictable, and I thought Jimmy was going to improve this. It's like we're running around each time down, looking for Steph. And then, you know, it just fumbles, turnovers, and so forth. It's just, that seems like that should be Jimmy time and let Jimmy take the ball and go to the hoop. The second thing, on the defensive side, with 3 seconds left, we all know Steph is not the best defender out there. Usually that's the time I thought they sub in GP, too. He wasn't available. But when they're inbounding the ball, why not, I'm talking to myself last night, why not bring in TJD to just make it more difficult to get that ball in the Barnes? It just seems like they should have went with a large defender on that inbounds play. So that's what I wanted to ask.
Sean, thanks. Appreciate it.
And that's a fair one.
That's a fair one. I don't know. You know, the Spurs are not a team where it's like, you know, in other words, ahead of time, I know they're going to Harrison Barnes for the fall away three. I don't know that. I don't know that. If I'm playing the Nuggets, I know what they're going to do. You throw the ball to Jokic. Boom, boom, boom.
Yep.
Shot. But the Spurs aren't that team. Are they going to Barnes? Are they going to put the ball in Castle's hands and let him try? You know, are they going to go to Vassell? Like, there's a number of ways that could have gone. But, yeah, hindsight, maybe you look to a taller player. Jim, you said this earlier. I thought Jimmy's defense on Harrison was fine.
Oh, it's great.
It was very good defense. Harrison made a great shot.
And Steph ultimately was not involved in the play, but I do think it's a fair question to ask. With 3 seconds left, and Steph Curry is not one of your best defenders, why not bring in somebody who's a better defender, knowing that even if San Antonio shoots and misses, you probably don't have time to rebound. And even if you do rebound, you have one timeout left.
Right.
So you could, in theory, rebound, collect, call timeout, then bring Steph back in. And again, I don't think that it really mattered because...
Very unlikely you're going to get another possession in that situation.
Right. So why not have a better defender in place of Steph Curry?
Fair question.
And again, it...
Didn't come into play, but
no,
fair question.
Didn't. I mean, Steph ultimately was the guy guarding the inbounder. And as I'm looking at the replay, he wasn't even really guarding the inbounder. He was sagging off looking to help. And, you know, Barnes just breaks open and turns right shoulder and puts it in Jimmy's eye. Great shot. Tip of the cap, but the inbound pass was largely unbothered, we can say.
Right, right. Yeah, no, that's a completely fair question.
Great call.
Mark in Petaluma. Hi, Mark. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks a lot. After last night's game, I was, really depressed. It was a really tough loss. And after some of these losses, I usually don't listen to a lot of the post-game stuff or programs like yours because it's too depressing. I don't want to listen to it. But you know what? After being really depressed about it, actually I needed to listen to this call, and I'm glad I did because I needed to think through what the hell was going on in my mind and listen to the back and forth to find out, what the problem was. So listening to you guys kind of let me clarify a lot about it because I was wondering myself, was it a particular player who blew it? Was it 3 players who blew it? Were it all players who blew it? Was it just an aberration of a game? Is it Jimmy Butler's honeymoon is over as they talk about a lot of the teams he's been in on kind of cool off after the first few games he's with him? So as bad as I felt last night, all the discussion, really helps me settle this thing in my mind. And even though it was a really bad loss, I can like move forward without having to second guess and feel so bad about the thing. One final thing to say, that Clippers game going to be big. Thank you.
Okay, Mark. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark.
Yes, the Clipper game is going to be huge. The Blazers game is going to be huge.
Yeah, the Blazer game got a lot bigger after last night.
Sure.
I mean, they're all big, right?
I thought going into this week, these three, Phoenix, San Antonio, Portland, you can't lose any of them. They did. And now even more so. You really, really, really can't lose another one. The Clipper one, based on how other things play heading into the weekend, I think it's very, very likely, if not almost assured, it's going to be a huge deal. But it may or may not end up being a backbreaker depending on what happens next. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I can't even think about the play-in tournament right now. But if you do end up there and you win Tuesday, I don't think that's preventative as far as how you can maneuver through the playoffs. I know that going in the play-in tournament and then actually making your way all the way through the playoffs and being a conference finalist or even an NBA finalist is very rare. I know Jimmy Butler has done it before. I see this as a rare kind of year. I don't think there's a huge separation between all of these teams. And so, you've talked about this too. The 7th seed is the Rockets. It's also on the other side of the bracket.
Yep.
And you would not see Oklahoma City potentially until the conference finals.
Yeah, you mentioned the tightness of the West, and you've got the Lakers who are 3 with 49 wins, Minnesota's 8 with 46. So you're talking about six teams separated by three games. So, yeah, you can't even really get into the if we this and if they that, then we can end up playing this team and playing that team. And I guess there's still a way that the Warriors could wind up as the three seed if the teams all in front of them spit the bit, horse racing term, and they all kind of fell apart. Although I don't think you can pass the Lakers because they have the tiebreaker over you.
Yeah, the Lakers are now out of reach.
You could get the four with Denver, who's only a game ahead of you, and you could certainly get the five if the Clippers lose and you win and you beat the Clippers. So there still is a lot that can be resolved. You'll be somewhere between four and eight, and it all comes down to these final two.
Yeah, and obviously handle what you can handle, which is you got to win your next two games and see what's happening around you. Let's go to Portland and find out what's going on straight from the team, okay? You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, an Odyssey sports station, always live on the free Odyssey app, and now coming to you live from the Laughing Monk Studios.